This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.
It's time for real stories from those who make our region and our country their home. Time for making yourself at home, thanks to the support from the Ethnic Communities Development Fund.
Good morning and welcome to Making Yourself at Home at 104.4 FM, your voice, your choice on Access Radio Taranaki. I'm your host, Brian, along with my other hosts, Alina from Romania and Amna from Pakistan. And I will welcome our special guest, Sean, also from the United States. He arrived almost 1 year ago to the day and with his wife and children. His wife is Kiwi from Taranaki. And Sean is happy to be in this beautiful place with his family. He owns a small technology business in the United States that's still operating that provides managed technology services centered around computing, communications, and cloud connectivity. He enjoys spending time with his family, wellness, the outdoors, music, investing, and creating joy in his life. We are very happy to welcome you here. Sean, how you doing, mate?
Thank you very much, Brian. I'm good.
Awesome.
I'm excited to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Cool. And you didn't know much about the show before showing up, it didn't sound like?
Not at all. I don't really listen to radio. Occasionally, I throw it on in the car, but I'm not really a radio listener anymore. I just like music.
Cool. Mm. Yeah. So you have no idea the pain and suffering we're about to...
The pain, right? Yeah.
No. Yeah. I think our guests always have a pleasant time just having a chat with us about their journey, how they made themselves home here in Taranaki.
Yes. So, yeah, nice to meet you, Sean.
Thank you, Elaine.
It's a pleasure to know one of Brian's friends.
Thank you.
And can you tell us a little bit more about you? So I know that you are from the U.S. Which part of the U.S.?
Yeah, I'm from upstate New York, which is upstate is considered anywhere north of New York City, basically. I'm from the Catskill Mountain region in a little town called White Sulphur Springs, New York, outside of part of Liberty, New York. And that's about an hour and 45 north and a little west of New York City. To give you more of a frame of where that is exactly. New York's a pretty big state.
That's right.
Yeah, and my wife, as Brian mentioned, is from right here in Spotswood.
Spotswood, okay.
Yep.
So how did you guys meet in New Zealand?
She actually finished college in Wellington in 2008 and had, for a summer, gone to the U.S., to work on a farm. Even though her degree was in psychology, she grew up very interested in gardening and farming, and she decided that she wanted a break and went over, came back, finished her studies, worked for a year, and found her work to not be too desirable. She wasn't working in the field of psychology. She wasn't really sure what she was going to do after that, with a bachelor's in psychology, and decided to go back to the U.S. again in 2010. At the same time that she was doing that, I was actually in transition in my life also. My mother had come down with a couple degenerative ailments. I was actually on the road in a vegetable oil powered van that I built from a little mini school bus. I went back home to help my mom with her illnesses and her home and her property with the idea of starting a small organic farm. And the two of us met through the farming community. So because she was interning at this farm, I was meeting other people in the area that were doing farming and interested in farming and telling them my story, and everyone was saying, you need to go talk to these farmers. They are legends here and they're doing exactly what you want to do. They'll be great for you to meet and have wonderful ideas and things. And I went there and they were busy and they said, here, meet our interns, and Cheyenne happened to be one of them, and the rest is basically history. My eyes lit up and we started dating.
Sweet.
And the real kicker though for me, the funny thing was that so I asked her, to go out to an open mic with me. I'm also a musician, and she and the other intern started going with me to these open mics, and then I asked her if she would help me on my property, do some work for me on her day off, and the other intern wasn't available. She was. So the first day she came over, she was pretty badly hungover from the night before us going out to an open mic, and and we ended up going out to the town of Liberty to pick up some things, and I was still driving my veggie van, and we passed a dumpster in the town of Liberty right on the main street that was full of amazing things. And I'm a reuse fanatic. I don't like seeing things go in the landfill.
Right, yeah.
So I was like, would you mind if I dumpster dived a little bit and just pulled some good stuff out? And we literally filled my van full. It was like there were full cans of paint. The whole time she was excited about it, and like by the end of that episode, I was like, "This chick is cool."
Nice.
So
she's the one.
We started dating, and that was 2010. And by 2013, we were married. Fall of 2013, and then 3 years later, 2.5 years later, we had our boy Escher, and then another year and a half after that, we had our daughter. And yeah, eventually we had been here, you know, we had come here many times, and our thoughts were eventually we might come here because her folks are still here and they're now elderly. And we lived together through my mom's end of life, and Shay helped me with taking care of my mom and our property and our house. And so the conversation had always been, you know, if this is what happens with your folks, I'm totally fine with it. And when my mom passed in 2018, I recognized pretty quickly we don't need to be here anymore. I don't need to be back home in the place that I grew up. We can literally go anywhere. We can do whatever we want. And because we had kids, and they were young, we decided to stay for a little bit longer. Then I had started my IT business in 2018, and it took off like a shot, especially through the pandemic. My business really increased significantly. And so we decided to continue to stay and not move, but we were still coming here. We actually got out before the borders got closed in 2020. we were here, and 2 weeks before the borders closed, we were able to get out. I mean, that was our schedule anyway.
So you've been in America afterwards, right?
Yeah. We went back to the U.S. And the reality is, like, you know, even though we were sort of vaguely planning to come here, we didn't have anything set in stone. When the second Trump administration happened at the beginning of last year, there were some key things for me that were eye-opening. One was Elon Musk throwing a Hitler salute twice during the inauguration. The billionaire seats at the table during that, I forget what it was exactly. It was sort of like Trump's kingship. I don't remember the exact thing, but when Bezos and, you know, all these billionaires were sitting at the table with him, it was like, yeah, this is really happening. I went to work one day. One of my customers carries a gun around with him. He was goading me about politics again, had his hand on his gun. My kids went to a school where they would walk through bulletproof glass every day.
Wow,
and
it's quite
police officers were shepherding them on. And I just thought, you know, it's time. Like, I would rather we all be in a safer, happier place. And I've been here before, and my wife is from here. So we made the jump.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity, right?
Yeah. And it was easy. You know, they're all citizens. I'm not. But it just made sense.
Sean, during that, you mentioned your veggie-powered minibus. You've told me a bit about that journey that you took before, and that's really when it clicked in my mind to invite you on the show to talk about your adventuring. What year did you get the van and get that thing powered by veggie oil, and fill us in on details, I guess, about how that works? Because I don't think many people are familiar with the idea of powering a vehicle on veggie oil, and where you went and what your experiences were like.
Yeah, so I had very similar to the shift that I made to here. I was at a transitional point in my life. And I'd been working IT for years, and I was kind of coming to the end of that career path, I thought. And at the same time that I was doing that, I was interning on one organic farm, and I was volunteering on another organic farm up in Burlington, Vermont. I lived in Burlington for on and off for, and in Vermont on and off for 7.5 years. And this was just prior to me moving back to where I grew up. I met some folks in the organic farming community and learned about biodiesel and learned about vegetable oil powered vehicles and the fact that the diesel engine, as we know it today, is actually a hybridized model of the original diesel engine, which was invented by a guy named Rudolf Diesel in the 1800s, the late 1800s, in the boom of the Industrial Revolution. And the idea behind the engine was that it can run on oils. Mm-hmm. Specifically, he invented it to run on peanut oil to prevent the fossil fuel industry from controlling people's destiny. He saw that as a very real thing happening through the Industrial Revolution, and designed this engine to run on peanut oil so that farmers could grow their own fuel and then power their engines to continue to grow more and more agriculturally. A friend of mine had a couple VWs that he had converted. He had a friend of his do the conversions. And my trip was really a culmination of a failed relationship with a woman that I bought a house with, and the realization we couldn't live together. She opted to take a trip to Thailand, and I opted to just see the United States, and I wanted to do it as environmentally friendly as I could. And I looked at several different things, and I talked to this friend with a veggie oil cars, and did a bunch of research, found a vehicle, got a mini school bus that was really just a Chevy van, hired a carpenter friend of mine, and he and I gutted it and built it out as a camper van, I started to put the vegetable oil conversion kit into it, which basically allows you to go from running on diesel to switching over to vegetable oil. When the vegetable oil is the right temperature, it has to be at 71 degrees Fahrenheit for the diesel engine to actually start burning it properly. And midway through the conversion, I realized I needed a mechanic. And he referred me to his friend. I brought it there. He helped me with that conversion and upgraded a few things on the van. And within a period of about 3 months, I had taken the bus and converted it into a camper van that had a hydrogen fuel cell, solar power, and the vegetable oil system, and hit the road. The first place that I went to was the Burning Man Festival in Nevada, in the Black Rock Desert, Nevada.
Started in New York?
I did.
Wow.
No, I started in Vermont.
Okay.
I went to New York. I visited my mom before I hit the road. This was just prior to her ailments really setting in. And stayed with her for a few days while I was still working on the van. The van was like in beta phase before I hit the road, and then I hit the road and I was like, wow, I still have issues I need to deal with. The hydrogen fuel cell kept having problems, but the solar and the vegetable oil were good. The vegetable oil, the interesting thing about vegetable oil is, again, with the diesel vehicle, you can literally dump oil right into a diesel engine, into a tank. And as long as it doesn't go below a certain temperature and coagulate, all of the engine components work perfectly fine. However, if you get water that's mixed in with the oil or other particulates, then the components of the engine and the fuel distribution system can have problems. And I learned that very quickly. I was picking up oil from dirty locations like McDonald's. One time I picked up oil from McDonald's and it had water and particulates in it. Even though I had an onboard filtration system, I had a pump, kind of like you go to a gas station. I had a very similar setup. One end I could throw into a tank and pull the oil into my van and pump it either into 5-gallon containers that I had to store it. I could store up to 240 gallons in my van while I was traveling. My tank was 40 gallons, so it would filter, it would run it through a filter when I first pumped it, and then I had other filters on board that I could use to get it down to either a micron or a half micron filtration, which is a micron is 1/100th the size of a human hair. So anything that needed to be filtered, any particulates or anything, and then I also had a water process to get water out of it, but I broke down many times. Made it to Burning Man 3 days late, thankfully, actually, because there were windstorms and dust storms. Okay. And when I got there, people were like, oh, you missed the worst of it, so you actually got here at the right time. So all my breakdowns actually worked out for the best. But I literally broke down in Painted Horse, New York, I think was the name of it. My van just died. I was driving along, and it just stopped working. And I veered off the road on an exit, and a guy pulled over in this really crazy looking sports car, and he turned out to be a diesel mechanic.
Wow.
And amazing. Took me literally right around the corner was the guy's shop that he worked for. And this was a Sunday. He got a tow truck to come pick me up, and the next morning they fixed me up and I was back on the road. So there were all these weird, I really should have written a book about that whole trip.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say, that you need to write something on it.
Yeah. The hard thing is now a lot of those memories I don't have. That was 2008. And so it's, you know,
pre-Burning Man versus post-Burning Man.
Yeah, exactly. I lost some of those memories on the way. I stayed in Alaska for a couple months, and Alaska has some of the best marijuana on the planet. So a lot of my brain cells that might have held those memories are pretty much gone now. But there's still a lot there. But yeah, people were telling me. I started blogging on the trip. Like the beginning of my trip, that was the intention, was to actually blog about it so that my family and friends could see what was going on, and I didn't need to contact people too much. That went out the window very quickly. Because I was having so much fun on my trip, like that all looked like work to me. And I had to work also. I was holding a 20-hour-a-week remote tech support job for the company that I was the IT manager for in Vermont before I rolled out of Vermont. And that was an interesting story, too. I was the IT manager. This woman that I owned a house with, the relationship that went south, was in the other side of the state. So I convinced them to let me remotely work, because I set their whole company up, their sales force, to work remotely and travel. They agreed. They hired a guy to be the IT manager. I became the remote support guy. And then I realized I don't actually need to be anywhere. I can be anywhere I want and do this job. And my sister was really the one that convinced me. She was like, why don't you do it then? Like, just figure it out and do it. And then this crazy trip came up as the idea, and away I went. And so I did that for 13 months. And during that time, I did this thing called WOOFing, which a lot of people also don't know about. WOOFing stands for Worldwide Opportunities on Organic Farms. And if you go to wwoof.org, you can learn how to do this. There are other things now, like couch surfing, and there are other work trade things that you can do. But because of my time on the organic farms that I was working and volunteering on in Burlington, Vermont, learned about WOOFing and decided to continue that while I was on the road, because my love of organic farming was pretty embedded at that point. And so the majority of my trip was centered on WOOFing with people across the U.S. and seeing different places across the U.S., experiencing the United States more than I had ever really known. And that brought me to California, Nevada, Utah, Montana, and most of the WOOFing that I did was actually in California. I spent 8 months out of the 13 months of my trip in California. I fell in love with California. And so I woofed in a lot of different places, and my love of farming grew more. And so by the end of my trip, before I decided to move back home and help my mom out, my next intention was to actually buy property and start a farm. And so my mother's offer to go back home and help her through these problems and be there as support, the agreement was that I could actually turn the property that I grew up on into a small organic farm. That's what I ended up doing. That's how I met my wife. That's why I'm here. So it all kind of snowballed over the last, I'd say, since 2008, really. My weird paths in life essentially very clearly led me here.
Amazing story.
A lot of fate in there, a lot of weird, you know, maybe coincidences or
you were meant
twists.
To be there.
Yeah, meant to be.
Whether
like
three
right?
days late or 3 days early, but you were meant to be there in order to reach here.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
So do you still plan on farming here?
Well, we sort of do. So we rent right now. We own in the U.S. still. But our path to property ownership and home ownership here is going to be slow. Part of that is the fact that I only have a permanent visa. I'm not yet a citizen. My wife doesn't really have income established yet. She has a business, but it's going to take a little while. So banks really won't look at us. If we came in cash in hand, we could buy property and kind of go back to what we had in the U.S., which when we left, we had three properties side by side. We were farming on two of them. We had just bought a third. And the farm had been operational since 2012. And through the pandemic, we kind of slowed down. Through having kids, we kind of slowed down. But our idea coming here was, well, Shay's folks own 2 acres right in Spotswood. It's one of the last properties that hasn't been chopped up due to development. And that we could continue very small scale what we were doing in the U.S., growing food and animals there. And so we have been. and they are actually looking at potentially selling and downsizing because of their age and the rates right now are higher on their property. You know, typical sort of elderly path to downsizing a life and taking the income you could make from your property and kind of investing it in the rest of your life and then having some legacy, you know, inheritance or something for your kids. So we're sort of working through that right now and trying to help them make decisions as to what they do. But in the meantime, just a few months ago, I built a huge raised bed garden around a fenced-in garden that they already had. And we've been growing crazy amounts of food over there. I just harvested carrots and beets and lettuce. And every day, we eat together, and we have huge salads and you know, curries with fresh vegetables. And so we're in that path, but having kids really changes one's life.
It does, right?
You know, and if you have kids, you know this. Right? So when I got off the road and I moved back in with my mom and I was back in my hometown, my goal was to farm, and I did, but I was also still very much a everyday musician, and I was in at the high point 3 different bands, recording and performing and practicing, and we were hosting woofers on the farm and, you know, doing these really amazing, crazy things in our youth. And when we had kids, we realized the differential between doing what we want 16 hours a day to now we have to take care of these other dependent beings. The shift was very drastic, and very quickly in 2016, when we had our boy, we started recognizing that, and within 2 years we basically slowed down on the farm. Right as my mom came to her end of life, which was part of it too, we had to slow things down. Then we had our second child. And at that point, my wife, who was really running the farm because I was now running my IT business and couldn't spend, you know, anywhere from 10 to 16 hours on the farm every day, everything kind of came to a crawl. And our goal was when our kids got older, we would move right back into it. And we did start the last couple years, I'd say. I'd been doing upgrades on the property, and my wife just finished a food forest on the second property that we had been farming on, which was about a 10,000 square foot, meter wise, I guess that would be like, I don't even know what the translation is there. It was a big,
big piece of an
area to have a food forest in. So she spent a few years working on that after we had kind of downscaled the farm. And the goal was to move more towards permaculture-based growing. My wife and I are both permaculture designers. And so coming here now, we were like, well, we need a transition period. And we can go to her parents' property and do what we can there, knowing that either we're going to work out some sort of legacy plan there with them, or they're going to decide to move and maybe downsize, or we all move in together on a property. They're very much into growing food and growing plants. They had animals in previous years and would like to get back to that. So we're still kind of working on that. But for the last year that we've been here, it's been the transition. You know, it's been a very, for me, a steep curve to being in a new place, learning the ins and outs of New Zealand and Taranaki in general. Acclimating, getting new friends, dealing with the crazy hours, working my business in the U.S. 8 hours away, 6 hours away right now, but in like a month it's going to be an 8 hour difference. And, you know, just working through life's ups and downs, our kids going to school, their friends. And now that I'm here for a year, I feel like I have a really good community of people, support mechanisms. My wife has a business and she's earning income now, so like the transition financially has become a lot easier. I've shifted from focusing on working my business every day, 6 or 7 days a week in the US, to doing a little bit of that, but transitioning my financial outlook to investments. And I've been doing a lot of work within investing in the stock market and various things. And we still have our properties and everything in the U.S. to deal with. We left within 9 days of making the decision. So literally, our cats were still living in our house. I still had projects that I was working on. Two of the biggest contracts, the biggest contracts my business ever had, went to contract when we were leaving, as we were leaving. And so all of that was still, like, our life was still in motion. We were still getting mail, postally, you know, phone calls, everything was a very, very quick transition. But pretty easy because we had people here. My wife grew up here. My kids were dual citizens. The biggest fear for me was that I was going to get booted out of the country if I didn't get a visa quick enough. And luckily, I had started that process the week we decided to leave. We went and got our FBI background checks. I did all the research I needed to get everything we needed before we left the country. And as soon as we did, we were on a plane and we were here. So it only took us 9 days from the decision to landing actually
That's fast, right? It was insane. It was
very fast. Wow. And thankfully, like, because I'm a technologist, I have cameras all over my house and my property. Everything is, you know, basically visible from here, from my phone. So, like, I was plugged in. The guys that work for me were helping me take care of the house. And then I went back last year after being here for 6 months and sold a bunch of stuff. Did a bunch of work on our property, did work for my customers, and then out of nowhere, one of our properties sold, and a guy who lived down the road ended up renting our house, and he's there now. So again, it was all
coincidence, right?
It all like, kind of well.
Everything
it
was
almost
working.
Worked out.
Yeah.
I think it worked out because my wife and I are movers and shakers. Like we don't just sit idly by. Mm. We put our mind to something and we manifest
it. You do
it
right, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Unless we get thrown off course by something significant, and even then, you know, we pretty much put our nose to the grindstone and we make it happen. So, again, here I think that transitional phase. If we give ourselves enough time, I have no doubt in my mind I'll start a good IT business here at some point. I might go to work for somebody to kind of get the lay of the land, but I'm feeling more like I drive my destiny, not somebody else.
Yeah.
So I'll figure that out, but right now I don't need to. I have the ability to financially step back a little bit and let my wife work for a little while and get her business acclimated. She's very happy with what she's doing. So happiness and joy have become the center of what my needs are right now for myself, my family, my kids. And that's what I've been focusing on for the last like 5 months, has just been how to create more joy in my life, get more acclimated here. I'm volunteering for a couple organizations here now, which is really
nice.
Sweet. Taranaki Retreat.
Ah, so you are Taranaki Retreat.
Put a plug in for those wonderful people, Jamie and Susie, awesome people.
Yes, we know them. Yeah,
my friend Owen works there. They're just awesome people, and I started volunteering with them. And yeah, so I'm just doing stuff that that makes me feel good, basically.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And this is such an interesting interview because we didn't have to ask so many questions from Sean.
No, I talk a lot.
And I'm so glad that he's told us everything. But I really want to ask you, how are the kids doing?
Yeah.
The kids are amazing. They our kids are very resilient. Most kids are, but ours are extremely resilient. And they left, they left very excited to make the move.
Yeah.
And secondarily, when we got here, within like 5 days, I think it was, they were registered and going to school.
Yeah.
Their grand folks live right across the street from Spotswood Primary, and my wife was going to Motoroa, and so she said, let's go look at both schools. And within 3 days of being here, we were interviewing at those schools, and on that third day in, the kids, after going to Motoroa and staying for the rest of the day, they said, yep, this is where we want to be. And the next day they were in school.
Amazing.
And they immediately made friends because they're social butterflies like their parents.
Aww.
And they just adapted immediately.
That's nice.
They have a great group of friends. The parents of their friends are awesome, and we get together socially a lot. Go to the beaches, have barbecues, et cetera, et cetera. We take their kids sometimes. Mm-hmm. They take our kids. We kind of balance things out in that way. Our kids have I think, educationally experienced a lot of positivity, too.
Mm-hmm.
Motoroa School is really amazing. The people that run that school are doing an amazing job in the community, and we have adapted our life through this shift with some major differences that I think have affected our kids positively also, like eliminating television, which we recently just did, and the kids actually really love it and appreciate it. So they only get it one day a week now. For family movie night, Friday nights, and screen time is very limited, and so their focus now is more on the outdoors
and
the real
outside,
world,
yeah.
and playing with kids and playing outside, and they have adapted extremely well with every change that we've thrown at them, and we are blessed for that because I see other kids who don't adapt to change very well. But we're pretty intentional with our kids, too. Mm. So Brian and I know each other through what's called men's work, men's circle. It's a very intentional process. And I do that with my kids now, where we will sit in circle, and we will each get our turn talking and can acknowledge others and be respectful and mindful and... it has really helped our family move beyond what I see in the world around me as some significant stopping points for growth.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing our kids grow a lot just in the last 6 months. It's been pretty amazing how things are going. So we're all doing really well.
That's amazing,
lot of it, I think, is the society. I think being in not just New Zealand, but in Taranaki, which seems to be this gem in the country, there are so many amazing things here, and the people here are very chill and very welcoming. Kiwis are more reserved, I think, and passive than other folks, but it's like a very dynamic soup of people here. You know, you're Romanian, right?
Yeah.
Alina, and you're from Pakistan.
Yeah.
Brian and I are from the US, but like I'll go out into the world and meet somebody and they're from France or they're from South Africa or, you know, Australia or whatever. And in the US, that wasn't really the case in the area that we were living in prior to coming here. It was all very much white middle America. And the town that we were in, the town of Liberty, actually over the last decade had become more and more Latino-based because of a potato chip factory that expanded and was purchased eventually by Frito-Lay and PepsiCo. But you didn't really see people from other places or people of color frequently at all in our area. So coming here was nice, especially the indigenous culture here.
Yeah.
I'm trying to learn Maori right now and getting more acclimated to the connection of the indigenous culture with the Commonwealth colonial factor here, like the U.S. It's very different than the U.S. And it's beautiful. It really is nice to see the cultures melded and blurred, you know, kind of. To read something and have to then look up Maori words to understand.
Yeah. Because it's everywhere, like,
Yeah, it's really becoming more and more integrated. And that's a really sweet factor of our life here, too.
I wanted to ask you, because you're working in, you volunteer at Taranaki Retreat, and it's a great place for people for... And you said you do some men work. Do you do that for men? What kind of men's work you do?
Well, it was really self-care at first.
Self-care, right? Okay.
Yeah, so it was like I had a really hard point 6 months in here where through working my business in the U.S., getting up very early hours every day, I wasn't getting a lot of sleep. So if I was getting up at midnight or 1 or 2 in the morning to work, and then my kids were getting up to go to school at 6 a.m., and I was seeing them off to school by 8 a.m., I would be working until anywhere from 11 to 3 p.m. when they got home from school, and I would want to have time with them. So I might take a nap or power through it, and then I'd want to put them to bed like we normally read to our kids before bed.
Yeah.
And by 9 o'clock at night, I'd be completely spent and then have to get back up within 3 or 4 hours. And I was drinking a lot of coffee like I had done in the States. And then I started drinking alcohol thinking that the alcohol would put me to sleep easier. And it was doing the opposite. So I was just in a funk. And I got into a really dark place where it was almost like psychosis because of the sleep deprivation. I was just not processing mentally properly. Physically let myself go. I didn't have time to exercise. I didn't feel good at all. So like 6-7 months in here, I crashed pretty hard. And I recognized I needed some self-care. And I had been involved in men's work and men's gatherings and circles and stuff for many years back in the U.S. Kind of let go of that when I started the farm and we had kids. And I realized pretty quickly through that crash, I need some me time, and one of the best ways that I can do that is with other people who are going through similar things in life, whether it's just mental duress of one thing or another, suicidal thoughts, you know, the need for connection and communication with other people to get things off of your chest. And so I found a few different groups here and started going to them consistently on a weekly basis, took time away from work, started exercising, meditating, reading, writing, playing music more, getting back into the things that made me tick as a human. And so now I'm a member of three different groups that meet either weekly or bi-monthly. I'm in an actual men's program right now. Shout out to Stone James with the Stone Circle. That's a six-month program that I'm in right now where it's like centered around daily meditation, daily exercise, journal writing, very much centered around what you intentionally want to bring into your life. I'm in my eighth week now with that. And so my day-to-day is very different than it was when we moved here. My day-to-day when we moved here was I'm Mr. Businessman running this business, and I have my kids and my family, and now it's very much like, yeah, I have all of that in my life, but my focus is my happiness. And when I'm happy, I can make other people happy. Exactly. So my kids' happiness and my wife's happiness and her folks' happiness, and when I go out into the community, how can I spread joy in the community and feel joy back? And that's what I've been focused on. And it's hard. It's work. It's,
yeah.
You know, it really is a lot of work.
Listening to your story, I just keep coming back to the fact that community matters. Connections matter, especially for people moving from different countries and making New Plymouth or let's say any other place their new home. You really need a village. It can be a struggle just being alone, and in isolation, nothing will work out.
No.
And just as you said that because of you guys, it was easy for your kids to be like, your kids are very social, for them settling down was easy. So that's a ripple effect in my opinion, because of your happiness, your kids are happy and your kids are in school, they will impact other kids who are probably going through something, and so on. It'll affect so many families. So I'm glad that you worked on yourself, because sometimes we just let go of ourselves in the process of just doing it for others. We just forget about ourselves. And
part of the, not to cut you off, but part of the men's work, to go back to your question, Alina, is that when you are in those circles, at a point you get to a realization where you're not just there for yourself anymore. Because you may go into it longing for, like I did, definitely did when I was here. I went into it going, okay, I don't feel right. I don't feel healthy. I need connectivity and I need some light. I need somebody to be a light, like a beacon for me. And now that I've moved through that and I can say that I am joyful and happy and I'm manifesting what I want in my life, I'm still in those circles because I am a beacon for other people. And so a lot of that work, the idea behind men's work and women's work and circles and community is that we are all here for each other. And the recognition that that is something that is a continuous thing through your life. And if you, like you said, if you separate and you seclude, you move into seclusion, things start becoming fragmented and disconnected in your life. The idea of connection and disconnection is very real. When you lose those connections with other people, you become in a disconnected state. And so there are brothers in groups that I'm in who are longing and seeking and needing that connectivity. And that's what puts me there now. You know, like I feel like, yeah, I could probably go through my day and my week by myself again and disconnect from the groups, but I recognize the amount that I got from it and the amount that I can give back to it.
Yes.
And the other people that are there, the other men that are there that are going through very similar things. And I happen to be King tonight. I'm hosting.
Is it? So tell us more where we can...
Yeah, it's an archetype. So there are archetypes, and I can't really talk much about this particular group because we take a vow of confidentiality. There are archetypes in men's work that men assume as a way to guide themselves. And when you sit in circle, there's this idea that you take on this archetype. And so I'm hosting tonight, and it's my first time in this particular group, and I'm pretty excited about it. But the idea to me is that I'm in service to the other men in this group. So I see that as the very real reason for doing this work, is that it is not just the self, but it's being in service and being in connection with the other people.
You become selfless over time. You're not just thinking about yourself. But and it's really powerful thing to talk about it and not gatekeep all these things and not feel ashamed, because at times it's difficult, generally it's difficult for men to open up about their feelings and their struggles, whereas it comes naturally to women. They can cry about it, they can talk to their friends about it, or maybe they can just start screaming at their kids, you know, that they're going through something. But with men, I feel that they kind of keep it in. They don't really talk about it much.
That's very correct.
There's
very
this taboo connected with it that, you know, boys don't cry, men don't cry. But I think we need to normalize that. Anybody who's listening to this and they really want to get in touch or just, I think Sean is your man. Talk to him, get in touch. I think Brian and Alina can help you through that. But yes, these are the conversations that are needed now. And there's no need to be ashamed about.
Yeah, not at all. I mean, I didn't feel ashamed about it, and I never really have. Like, I'm comfortable. A lot of people aren't comfortable with the idea of something like therapy, seeking a counselor, because then they feel themselves that they're weak and they can't overcome life's problems. But a lot of the problems that we have in life are extremely complicated. And they may even be things that you're not even aware of. And so if you can break down that internal boundary and just recognize we all need support in some way, shape, or form, and a conversation is one of the easiest ways of being supportive with somebody. Somebody speaks, I listen. All I have to do is listen. And that's like the best thing that I could potentially do for somebody who's going through.
Exactly, and everyone needs to be listened, right?
I mean, it's nice to be heard, right? Even if somebody's just sitting there shaking their head going, yeah, I get what you're saying. There doesn't have to be a solution or any response whatsoever. It's just giving somebody a platform to experience what they're going through with someone else. And then maybe there's more beyond that. You know, there's, okay, there's an avenue like the Taranaki Retreat. I found those people through one of my groups. I was gifted 3/4 of a day to go hang out at the retreat and just be there. And it was phenomenal to go see this group of people who, there are a lot of volunteers, but there are people that work for the retreat who are focused and centered on eliminating suicide in our community. And the way that they're doing it is so amazing. It's so positive and so joyful. And so I experienced that for that day. It grounded me and brought out a lot of grief that I've been moving through. And I thought to myself at the end of that day, I want to do this more for other people. And that was like 4 months ago, I think. And so I started talking with them, and I went to another thing at one of their other offices, and then, you know, said I want to volunteer. And it took a while. It took like 2 months to get to the point of the volunteer induction. But I'm now volunteering with them, and I'm a part of their community. And it's just great to see something like that in the community that, that you're, you know, as you were saying, that a lot of people are fearful of that, or they're worried that what someone else might think of them. You know, if a coworker knew that they were going to get support and help that they actually needed to ground themselves and be a functional person in the world, it's a really hard boundary for a human to move through. But once you move through it, I think, once I've moved through it, I feel grounded. Mm-hmm. I feel better. Mm. And I recognize that, like, I have all of these flaws and issues mm-hmm. that I'm moving through from the past, the mm-hmm. present, and I know in the future I'll have them too.
Yeah.
And it's just a great
way. It's part of
you,
right?
Yeah, yeah, it's part of all humans. Mm-hmm. I think it's life in general. You know, bugs are flying around outside getting
coming
chased
and going
by birds.
Through us, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah, and they land on us and we swat that. Like, everything is under
it's
attack.
It's moving, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And so the more that we can be supportive of each other and ourselves, I think the better off society mm. will be. And again, the reason why I moved here, I think the reason why you guys have me on this show that I should be talking about, why I came here was to have a better life.
Yeah.
Ultimately.
And obviously it looks like you have a better life.
I feel like I do now. Mm. It's taken, you know, 6 months to a year, but I was saying that to Brian when I showed up today, that I finally feel like I'm connected.
Mm.
I'm here. My brain isn't there back yeah. in the U.S. And I feel like I have a community. I feel like I know what I'm doing now. Mm. I feel like I'm joyful and happy from a day-to-day basis. I don't wake up with dread every morning.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's really where I was. Even prior to moving here, mm. when I was in the U.S., my brain was operating very differently.
Yeah.
And so, yes, I'm in a better place.
So before we wrap up here, as our time is coming to a close, a couple plugs about resources about men's work in the region. We've got the Taranaki Men's Circle, which is a monthly occurrence, and that's at www.bros.nz.
Yep.
The group that Sean and I are a part of is called the Mankind Project. So just Google Mankind Project to find out more about that. Is there another group that you can think of off the top of your head?
Again, Stone James, yep. who's a local practitioner, has the Stone Circle and the Sword programs. And for women, he has a program as well, and I'm forgetting the name of it now. I think maybe it's the Stone Maidens. I forget how you can find him online, but if you Google Stone James Taranaki, you'll find him. And he does a men's retreat. There is a new retreat center that's going to be opening within the next, probably this year, here in Taranaki called Ascent Wellness. That's run by a guy named Richard Nemeau. It's a beautiful location.
Where is that? Do you know?
That is up on Plymouth Road.
Oh, okay.
Where Carrington crosses Plymouth.
Oh, Plymouth Road. It's on the way to Wakura, right? Yeah.
It's on the way to Pukidi.
All right. Yeah.
Out in that direction. There is a woman's retreat that's going to be happening there in March
mm-hmm.
Called Ember and Ash, I think. My wife is actually part of a women's circle.
Amazing.
Here in Spotswood. So if there are any women out there that want information on that, please contact me.
I think my partner's part of that circle.
Yeah,
also.
We can.
Brian, yep. There's lots of resources in the community. Taranaki Retreat is one of them, of course. And anyone out there who might be feeling like they need some other connection and just some support, they're all amazing resources, and especially if you're shifting your life to this country from another country, which is what this show is all about, and I get that. Having that support where you really don't have support at all, these are starting points. Mm-hmm. And
amazing.
Maybe they're not the end goal, there's something else beyond it, but please reach out. The people that are doing this work are all just amazing human beings.
Thank you. Thank you, Sean. I think we need to have another show with you.
Yeah.
It feels like that, right?
What you just said preempted our typical question to close out the show, which is what advice would you give to somebody moving to a new place? And it sounds like getting out there and finding the support that you need when you're feeling alone and you might be by yourself.
So contact Sean.
No, we definitely
to a circle.
Call him again.
Yes.
I'm just thinking we haven't talked about food. We haven't talked about what you eat at home. Is there
your family?
But it was
lovely
talking to you.
It was great to be here. Thanks for having
thanks
me.
So
thank
much,
you,
Sean.
And see you next time.
And thanks, Elena. Thanks, Amna, for sitting in. It's nice to see you again. This has been Making Yourself at Home at 104.4 FM. Your voice, your choice. And we will see you next week. Have fun making yourself at home in Taranaki. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode. For more information and others just like this, head along to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.
This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.